Blessing to again be gathered together in this way. And I trust that as we get into the message, it'll be like Brother Anthony said, not what I say, but what we can learn from God. I come as a vessel, and I trust we can learn together. This morning we're going to look at Matthew 7 as our text. I'm going to do an expository message. We're pretty much going to stick here in this chapter. I've titled the chapter, Relationships. As we look at relationships, it's going to develop, first of all, we're looking at human relationships. And then we're looking at what constitutes an upbuilding spiritual journey. And then ultimately, acceptance with God. And I trust as we go through the message, we'll see the progression. Human relationships are an outworking of our relationship with God. You know, what we do on this level is a reflection of what we have on the vertical plane. It shows us what we have before God. You know, if we are self-centered, it shows here. But it's because of our relationship here. Because I have placed myself before God. That's why I am selfish with people. If we're self-centered, we're not on the narrow road. Finally, a life like that, and we could fill in the blanks with a lot of things, but a life like that is going to lead to a day in the future where God will say, I do not know you. And God forbid that that should be the case with any of us. That's why we are looking at a message like this morning. We're going to read Matthew 7 in sections. First of all, we're going to read verses 1 to 12. Matthew 7, verse 1. Judge not that ye be not judged, for with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged, and with what measure ye mete, it shall be measured to you again. And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, Let me pull out the mote out of thine eye, and behold, a beam is in thine own eye? Thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then shalt thou see clearly to cast out the mote out of thy brother's eye. Give not that which is holy unto the dogs, neither cast ye your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet, and turn again and rend you. Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. For everyone that asketh, receiveth, and he that seeketh, findeth. And to him that knocketh, it shall be opened. Or what man is there of you, whom if his son ask bread, will he give him a stone? Or if ye ask a fish, will he give him a serpent? If ye then, being evil, know how to give good gifts unto your children, how much more shall your Father which is in heaven give good things to them that ask him? Therefore, all things whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them. For this is the law and the prophets. Okay, one of the first things I observe as we look at these verses, in verses 1 and 2, what we give is often what we get back. And I'll illustrate it with this little story. As far as I know, it's a true story. The police came on the scene of a domestic violence report, and there was a 15-year-old boy dragging his dad out of the house by the hair. And the police went to step in immediately, and the dad said, don't do it. He said, 20 years ago, I did this to my dad. It's just coming back. Many times, we get what we give. And it doesn't always come back that exactly. But many times, we will get back what we give. And I've seen that in numerous other situations in life. We need to remember that. Verses 3 to 4 is a reminder that as humans, We have beams in our eyes. It's challenging us not to go after the motes that are in the eyes of others, because we have beams in our own eyes. And those things can be different. You know, maybe it's the collar shirt you chose to wear this morning that bugs me. Maybe it's the way you style your hair. Maybe it's the way you laugh. But remember, I need to remember that there are things in my life that probably grate on you. In a relationship, it's two ways. Can I forgive my brother when he constantly clears his throat without thinking about it? Can I forgive my sister that has a child on her lap that's screaming? This is all about. This is our walk in life. We need to deal with these things. Because, yes, there are things that I do. There are things that you do that others need to forgive you for too. Verse 5 talks about how we need to take the beam out of our eye before we can be helpful with the mote in someone else's eye. So my third point under human relationships is we can be a blessing to others only as we keep after our own lives. And if I'm not willing to have you come to me and say, brother, this bothers me, this bugs me. Brother, you really need to address this need in your life. I can't expect to go to you and say, brother, sister, what about this? So we need to be open. We need to be willing to accept encouragement, criticisms, upbuilding criticisms. If we expect to be able to share in that way with others. Okay, the fourth point I have under here is found in verse 6. It talks about casting your pearls before swine. My point is relating to swine. It requires discernment. What are the swine in this verse? It's giving us a mental picture of taking something valuable and casting it out in front of pigs. I had the job for a couple weeks to attend to a herd of pigs. And it was supposed to be an easy job. All you had to do was go there and flip a switch here, and the feed would run out in the trough. And watch, you know, once it's enough, flip the switch back and attend a few other things. But as fate would have it, flipping that switch didn't always do what it was supposed to do. So here's the feeder hanging above the pig pen. It's not behaving. Well, one time, going to the floor above it and kicking it a little bit, jarred things around and it behaved. But another time, there was no choice but to crawl into that pig pen and check out that machine, find out what's wrong with it, get it going, come back just minutes later smelling like pigs. If we have something valuable and cast it before that kind of environment, it takes on the smell of pigs just pretty soon. Now, how can we bring this practical? I think all of you can think of situations without thinking very hard of people that needed help. They needed help badly. But possibly the reason they needed help was because they were trampling under the good things that they did have. I think we need to remember that they do have needs, and we are called to help where we can. But it takes discernment. In the case of those pigs, I could help them by getting them food and water. There wasn't a whole lot more I could do for them. I couldn't keep them clean. Didn't even try. Because, as the Bible says, they just go back to wallowing in the dirt, wallowing in the mire. They're soon muddy again. I could give them food and water. And what I want to draw our minds to is there are serious needs around us. As we look at the world around us, it takes discretion to know how to help. Let's not be afraid to help, but let's ask for God's wisdom to help in ways that would be a blessing. In ways that wouldn't encourage ruin. Verses 7 to 11, God says, "Ask and it shall be given you, seek and ye shall find." You know, I think God is the perfect example of benevolence. He says, "Ask and it shall be given you, seek and ye shall find." Does that mean if I would kneel down right now and tell God, "I think I would be happier if I would have a house that's twice the size of what I have now. When I get to Pennsylvania, my house will be twice as large"? I don't think so. But as we have real needs, and pray to God, God promises to minister to those needs the way that he sees best. He doesn't always say yes to what we think he should say yes to. He doesn't always provide the things the way we think he should provide them. But as we look back, we can see him working in ways above our understanding. We can see him touching our lives in ways that we never dreamed. We can see him bringing about a cause greater than us. God is the perfect example of benevolence. And as we look at an example, we need to look at what God's doing, because this is what we want to be doing. We want to be reaching out. We want to be touching the lives of others. And that brings me right into verse 12. We call this the golden rule. "Therefore, all things whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them." Simply put, if I would like it to be done for me, go do it for someone else. Our carnal nature knows benevolence. All we need to do is put ourselves in the shoes, and we know what we want. Do it to others. That's what this scripture here is telling us. "All things whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them." This is the law and prophets. So let's, whenever we're seeing someone face a situation, try to put ourselves into those shoes and act accordingly. We can pray and ask God for wisdom. We can picture ourselves in those shoes and act accordingly. We're going to read verses 13 to 20. And I'm going to need some help from a couple of the children. So sit quietly for a little bit. Going to need some help from three volunteers in a little bit here. Matthew 7, verse 13. Enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way, that leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat. Because straight is the gate that leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it. Beware of false prophets which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. Ye shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather thorns of figs? Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles? Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. Wherefore, by their fruits ye shall know them. And we're going into the subject of an upbuilding spiritual journey. And adults, I want you to listen to what that has to do with relationships. And children, I have a lesson here I would like for you to learn too. This is my pack elephant. His job is to carry stuff for me. Stuff that's way too heavy for me to carry. Now, I want him to go into that narrow gate. How's he going to get there? Somebody tell me how he's going to have to get in there. Douglas. He's going to have to take off the packs. He's not going to go in there with all his packs on. It's too narrow for him. Okay, now I want three volunteers to take off packs. Okay? Lorinda first, and then Dee Dee, I'll tell you next, and Brendan next. Okay, pick off one of those packs, and there's a little paper tied to it. Tear it off, and read to me what's in the inside of it. I think, yeah. Pride. Ah. He has to get rid of pride before he can go through that narrow gate. Go ahead, Dee Dee. We're ready for you. Does pride affect our relationships? It does. It affects our relationships. Go ahead, pick one and pull the tag off and read to me what it is. Selfishness. Okay, thank you. You can go back. Does selfishness affect my relationship with others? It does. Selfishness, when it's me, doesn't look so bad. But when it's you, it looks like a bean. Okay, Brennan, you can get the last one here. For the adults, the narrow way has a lot to do with our relationships. It's, what does it say, Brendan? Hate, okay. Hate is not going to work in good relationships. Somebody rubbing you the wrong way and you just take it out on them, that does not work to build good relationships. Can this elephant go in now?
I hope so.
Yeah, I think that's. Now he's good to go into the narrow gate. The narrow way is a whole thought process. It's not just a once and done choice. It's a whole thought process. We willingly leave things behind that are not suitable for the narrow way. Instead, we focus on what we can do for God. The reason people choose the broad way is because they can take that baggage with them. You know, if they want to be selfish and heap things to themselves, they can do that on the broad way. They can take that baggage with them. So our choice for the narrow way has a lot to do with our relationships on a human level. And we're going to see that it has a lot to do with our acceptance to God. When we finally reach the end of the road. Okay. The gate is narrow. Because of that, few are making that choice. First point under the upbuilding spiritual journey is it is restrictive. The gate and way is narrow. In the case of this elephant, once he gets inside of the city, we could actually bring the packs through and he could wear them again. But that's not true in the spiritual life. The way is narrow. We have to let those things go, and we have to instead focus on what we can do for God. And as we go further, verse 15 talks of false prophets. There are prophets that are trying to tell you, you can take that baggage with you. It's normal for somebody to vent their anger. After all, if they held it in, it would just come out in any explosion. Well, that's a false prophet. That person is not out seeking your good, and I don't care if he's a pastor behind a pulpit, if he's one of your friends, if he's somebody you meet on the sidewalk. If they're telling you something contrary to these verses here of a narrow way, a narrow gate, a narrow way, they are a false prophet. They are just trying to turn you aside. Possibly some sort of selfish interest. Possibly they want company on the road they're on. Whatever the case is, if it doesn't line up with this, it's false. This needs to be our guide for our choices in life. Okay. Verses 16 and 20. It's talking about the fruit. You can't get good fruit from a bad plant. We can't. Okay, and it's also saying in verse 20 that we can know a plant by its fruits. The third point in this section is we need to be able to discern if fruit is good or bad. Because we are going to have companions on the way. We started in the very beginning with the thought of judge not that you be not judged. How do we balance that with this idea of discerning the fruit? We can watch, and we can discern fruit. And know in our hearts if that's something that's going to take us where we want to go without being judgmental of an individual. I really believe we can do that. It takes the grace of God to do it, but we're called to do that. We're called to be able to look and see, is that fruit productive? Because as I relate to people in the world, brothers and sisters in the church, what they're doing is going to influence me. It's going to have an impact on my life. That does not necessarily mean that I'm going to do what they're doing. But it's only as I discern the fruit and decide, is that something that I can accept, or is that something that I am going to stand against, that we can relate and not take the same journey that they're taking. We have to make that call. Is this something that is going to be good for me? Is this something that is going to take me up the narrow way? We have to be discerning of fruit. Is it good or is it bad? My fourth point under the upbuilding spiritual journey is we need to produce good fruit. And hand in hand with that, there are not good, bad blends. I could have brought, and I thought about it a little bit, I could have brought an apple along with me this morning. You know, I've seen some very good apples, and if I would show you a polished apple, cut in half or a quarter of it cut out, it can look ever so good, but if I was to turn around and show you that there was the remains of a worm in that apple, is that a good apple? No. That apple is going one place. It's going to the garbage. And so it is in our lives. We cannot mix good and bad. We're tempted to think that if we were to put a scales up and put our good on the one side and the bad on the other side, as long as the good is heavier than the bad, we're making the grade. But no, there's not a good, bad blend. When God looks at our lives, He's not looking for mathematical majority of good over bad. He's looking for a committed life, a life that is there to serve God, a life that is there that's willing to lay down whatever is going to interfere with our relationship with God, and building that out in the first point with our relationship with others. It's looking for willingness to go the whole way. We need to be willing to lay aside the bad. We need to be willing not just to lay it aside, to cast it off, because it does not serve for our good. Okay, let's read verses 21 to 27. I've entitled this section of verses, Acceptance with God. Verse 21, not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name, and in thy name have cast out devils, and in thy name done many wonderful works? And then will I profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity. Therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man which built his house upon a rock. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat upon that house, and it fell not, for it was founded upon a rock. And every one that heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them not shall be likened unto a foolish man which built his house upon the sand. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and beat upon that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. Acceptance with God. Many times, we would like to believe, and you're going to have to listen me out, because I can't give all the points at once. We would like to believe that what I do earns me favor with God. And that is largely false. That is largely false. Because Christ gave the provision. He died on the cross. That is what saves us from our sin. So it is actually acceptance of that provision that gains us favor with God. Now, having said that, many times we would like to be able to talk about that and claim that as favor with God, not have it affect our life. My first point, I'm just going to give it now and keep on going, is acceptance as God is not just in what we say, but in what we do. Now, I already said the provision is in Jesus Christ. So gaining favor with God is in accepting that provision. It's not in talking about that provision. It's not in coming to church and looking good and figuring I served God for this week. What we do, just like our human relationships, show what my relationship with God is. What I do in my life will show you if I have accepted that provision. What I say really is not going to tell you a whole lot, because it's pretty easy to say and not do. Do you ever hear the expression, do as I say, not as I do? What does that communicate to you? That communicates a person that is not willing to take the right road home. It's a person that's not willing to live the right road in life. They know what that road is, but they're not willing to take it. So acceptance with God will bring action. Verses 22 and 23, we see people that are in good activities, casting out devils, doing works in the name of Christ. And yet Christ says, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity. Does that mean that I can do something good and still not have a right heart? I think it does. I think we can deduct that from that verse. I can do good things and still not have a right heart. And that's my second point. I can actually be busy in good things, but still not have an acceptable heart with God. Why do I do the things that I am doing? That's the question that I would like to call to the minds of each of us. Why do I do the things that I'm doing? Is it because of my love for God? Is it because I think others would be appalled at my life if I didn't do these things? Is it because this will build me up on some kind of a plateau? People will respect me because I'm morally good. You know, that is actually the fundamental reason a lot of people do the good things they do. Because it will gain them respect. It will gain them acceptance. Just watch their lives. If it doesn't, the pressure's not there to do it anymore. Why are you doing the things you're doing? Is it because you've accepted the provision of Christ and are happy to serve him? I trust that's why. I trust that's why. Verses 24 to 27, we have the very familiar story of the wise man and the foolish man. We sing about this as children. Sing the song, the wise man built his house upon the rock. What are we singing? We're singing about the importance of being founded on a rock. And that's my third point under acceptance with God. It's being established on the rock. Now we have to decide what that rock is. What is that rock that we need to be established on? Isn't that Christ? Isn't that rock Christ? I was just reading in Matthew this morning, chapter further down, where Peter confesses to Christ, Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus says, Thou art Peter, and on this rock I will build my church. Is Peter the rock? Some people would like to believe he is. But the fact that Christ is the Son of the living God, that's the rock. That's the thing that's not going to change. Peter was a devout disciple. devout apostle for many years, but he's passed off the scenes. But did the fact that Christ is the Son of the living God change? That is still standing. That's for you and I today. Christ is the Son of the living God, and we need to be established on that rock, because that is the rock that will carry us through the winds of time. You know, if we build on the sand, and you can fill in the blanks whatever you want to for sand. Anything you want to build on that's not Christ, that's sand. If I want to build on popularity, if I want to build on fame, if I want to build on people thinking well of me, if I want to build on a good following, that's sand. That's going to wash away with time. But the rock is there, always was there, always will be there. In Genesis 1, the rock was there. When Christ died, when he was crucified on that cross, the rock was there. Christ is the Son of God. Today, that rock is there. Christ is the Son of God. As we wrap this thing up, I hope you saw the progression between our human relationships, how that is affected by our choices of spiritual journey, and how our destiny is affected by that choice as well. You know, God has very clearly put a plan in place for us. We make choices for God. We're told in Luke, I believe it is, maybe some of the other Gospels too, that the first and greatest commandment is our love for God, and the second is like unto it. It is our love for our fellow men. And I want to challenge us with that as we go through the week. You know, I don't have to think, but over the past couple of hours, I struggled with patience. I struggled with being kind. I struggled with being considerate. But these things are an outworking of my spiritual journey. I need to go right back to that relationship with God and grow that, fortify that. And that's what will fortify my relationship with man. So as we go through the week, let's remember first God, and then it will also affect our relationship with our brothers and sisters around us. Thank you for your attention. Let's kneel for prayer.